Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that kiss. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we are brother Elis. But tonight we are going to talk about the 1990 movie and sleeper hit Ghost.
Indeed we are.
So, why don't you start by telling us how you first came to this movie?
My first memory of this movie is actually not related to watching the movie at all. It's related to seeing it reviewed on Siskel and Ebert. And I remember they had a really interesting conversation about this movie. Especially about the final, not the final scene, but one of the later scenes when Patrick Swayze as a ghost inhabits Whoopi Goldberg's body, and
spoiler,
yeah, they had a thoughtful discussion on how it would have been more brave of the filmmakers to just let Whoopi Goldberg continue to act in that scene, because they cut to a perspective where the Demi Moore character, Molly, can actually see Patrick Swayze as Sam. She could actually see him when in reality she should have only been able to see Whoopi Goldberg. So they have like this really kind of heartfelt, romantic final moment together. And Siskel and Ebert were talking. I haven't seen it in, 30 years, their review. But my memory is they talked for quite a while about how that kind of took them both out of the movie, because they thought it would have been a much more interesting choice to let Whoopi Goldberg handle it, because they thought she had the acting chops to do it.
Yeah, I can see that.
That really sort of interesting and thoughtful discussion always stuck with me, and that is actually what made me want to watch the movie, because nothing else about this movie made me want to watch it. You know, anything that I knew about it.
Oh, but it had Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, it had Patrick Swayze. But, you know, this, you know, for, I was, a 13-year-old boy at the time. It's not really the demographic for Ghost. And I don't think I ever really ended up watching it. You know, it was on cable or satellite as we had it. At the time, it was on, so I'd seen parts of it, but I never really sat down and watched it start to finish until I was in college. Me and my girlfriend, my future wife, watched it in her dorm room my freshman year, I want to say. How about you? The reason we're talking about this is because you've mentioned a couple times how much you like the movie Ghost.
I do. I have a certain fondness for this movie, and so this is a. I've talked,
and that's why we're talking about it, because this is one of those movies where I hear you like it, and I'm like, what? Okay, all right. We have to talk about this. So that's why it's on the calendar. That's why we're talking about it.
This is probably a way too long story, but, and I've told parts of this before, but
that's what we're here for.
It's the two of us, so you know, the rest of the world can just listen cautiously.
Eric will cut out all of the boring parts.
Yes, hopefully, or he'll leave one name in and bleep everything else out from his Al-Anon group. So I was working at the movie theater when this movie came out. But it wasn't playing at my theater. It was playing at the sister theater in Eagle River, the Valley River Cinemas. We had reciprocity, so my passes were good at either theater. So if I wanted to go see free movies, I could go out to Valley River and enjoy the same benefits, if you will.
And for those of you who aren't intimately familiar with South Central Alaskan geography, Eagle River is another town outside of Anchorage. It's still within the municipality of Anchorage, but it's not really Anchorage proper. It takes about, I don't know, what, 25 minutes to get there?
And of course, I was a teenager then, so I would have been 17-ish, 18, somewhere in there. It was the summertime, I do believe. When was this movie released? As I'm revising history, July 13th. So yeah, it would have been the summer. So I would have still been 17. Was working at the movie theater. I was manager at that point, which is a tenuous title because it really wasn't managing anything, but you know, managing to waste my time. So I had the day off, and I was hanging out with some other employees because we had this strange band of misfits. So it was these three other guys and me. And one of them is this real tall, skinny skater dude, skateboarding kind of dude, which now is common, but then wasn't really. Another was this kind of this chubby, mulleted, hick, redneck kid that lived in Ocean View. And then the third was he was a little bit older than I was. And he was like this ROTC military dude. So the three of us were really, or the four of us were like really divergent as far as personalities.
It's quite a motley sounding crew.
It was. What's important to know is that, you know, we're all teenagers and I had a car and they did not. So, well, one of them had like this shitty pickup that worked. Oh, one time out of 10, maybe. But we decided, hey, we're all hanging out together. Why don't we go see a movie? And so we're like, well, we'll head out to Eagle River and we'll see what's playing out there. Cause there was nothing playing at our theater that we wanted to see. Plus it's kind of like we worked at ours. We didn't necessarily want to see movies at ours. Cause then we had to deal with people on our day off who were all jealous that we all had days off while they were working their summer away. So we drove out to Eagle River, the four of us crammed in a car, and we really didn't know anything about any of the movies that were playing, and there was a double feature. And so we said, oh, we'll waste our afternoon with the double feature. And so the double feature was a Bobcat Goldthwait movie called Quick Change.
And also a Bill Murray movie.
Yes.
Also and then, a Gina Davis movie?
I think so. Followed by Ghost. So we showed up like 40 minutes late to Quick Change. And so I've actually never seen Quick Change other than the last half of it, maybe. And I don't recall it being remotely good. And I love Bill Murray and I love Bobcat Goldthwait. And I don't have anything against Gina Davis like Brother E does. So,
no, that's me.
Oh, that's you. That's right. Brother E has a type, and his type is Gina Davis, or had a type. So we all went in blind into Ghost. We didn't know anything about it. We thought it was going to be some supernatural kind of thriller. And by the end of the movie, the four of us were all just like, you know, that quiet, stoic teenage boy cry, you know, where you just got like the single tear and nobody's talking. And it was a very, very somber, quiet drive back to the city after the movie. And then all of us were like, would make eye contact and we just like scattered to the four corners of the wind and didn't like, we were just, that was it for the day. So it was this strange kind of, you know, teenage boys can't manage to emote with each other, which was funny because I have no problem emoting, but the three of them were overwhelming. So that was my first time I had saw the movie.
And did you, I mean, you had an emotional reaction to it. Did you
we all did.
Have a favorable reaction? Did you think that was a great movie?
I did. I thought it was a great movie. And it took me years to rewatch it because I just didn't want to relive the memories of not the movie, but the situation that had transpired. Because, you know, shortly after we had a falling out as teenagers do. And so anyway, there's baggage, of course. And so it took me years to come back to
this
movie.
Whose fault was it?
It was my fault.
All right. That's honest.
Yeah. I was 17 and idealistic. And I was convinced that if I was nothing but honest, everything would always work out. Because I think that's the axiom that we were kind of raised with. But as it turned out, my honesty was not rewarded. So I splintered the group apart permanently. But I later rewatched the movie and years later, and I realized that it's a horror movie. it's a scary, kind of creepy, you know, like could be very horror-esque. It didn't quite take on that entire bent, but very easily this could have been a very different movie. So I appreciated that. And as I rewatched it, some of it's a little dated, but for the most part, the movie still holds up for me. So I thought. And in looking at it, you know, the budget at the time was $22 million. Its opening weekend was $12 million gross, but the worldwide gross was $217, cumulatively $290 million. So this movie did just fine.
It was the number one movie of the year, wasn't it?
Could have been.
I mean, it started out real slow, but I think it became a huge hit. I mean, it really had legs.
It was a sleeper. What year did Hunt for Red October come out?
89?
Was it? No. Hunt for Red October was 1990.
Oh, wow.
So,
I want to talk about the Oscars for this year later.
It came out in March. Hunt for Red October came out in March, so I think what happened was, this is slowly coming back to me, Hunt for Red October was a huge sleeper. Nobody had expected it to do anything. And it went from just getting some kind of sales, and then Hunt for Red October blew up. And so I think we had intended that we wanted to go see Hunt for Red October because it was still playing in July. That's how popular it was. Those were the days where movies didn't come out, you know. Well, we didn't get movies all the time at our theater. So I think we had intended to drive out to see it, but there was no way we could have gotten tickets. We could have gotten in even in July. So, which is baffling today when I think about it, but I digress.
Ghost was the number one movie of 1990.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It beat out Home Alone, Pretty Woman, Dances with Wolves, and Total Recall.
Did it beat out Hunt for Red October?
Hunt for Red October is not even showing up in the top 10 for 1990. Are you sure it wasn't technically a 1989 movie?
I don't know. Let me double check. It was released in March, so I can't imagine it would have been 89. Let me see. Huh, it did not make as much money as Ghost. Budgeted, so Hunt for Red October is budgeted $30 million, opening weekend $17 million, total gross $122 million, cumulative $200 million. So it didn't do anywhere near as well as Ghost. Okay, you want to know the freaky thing right now? This is freaking me out. In the background of my screen on IMDb, on one side is Bill Murray and on the other side is Gina Davis.
Yep, every device you own is listening to what you say.
God damn. I'm going to close that window. It's creeping me out. All right, so we will, let me find a plot.
I mean, we're introduced to a trio of friends, two of who are a couple, Sam Wheat and Molly Jensen.
Yes.
And Sam and his friend from work, Carl, are shirtless.
Carl Bruner.
Yeah. You know he's a bad guy.
He just has that smarmy look. You know he's a bad guy.
Yeah. It's a very hard consonant German sounding name.
Plus that tight weave perm he's got.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, yeah, funny. So some gratuitous toplessness, but not from Demi Moore, to kick off the movie as they're renovating an apartment. And we soon learn that Sam and Molly are a young couple in love. They're not married. They're moving in together. And Carl and Sam work at a bank. And that's pretty much all we ever find out. They do banky stuff.
They do some kind of account day trading or money transfers or some kind of EFT kind of intra-bank or intra-institution lending, I would suspect.
Yeah, I mean, early 90s, nobody in this movie really knows how a computer works, even though they're supposed to.
Yeah.
But it's fine. It's movie logic.
That's well, fine. And they set the stage very early that Sam is superstitious. He doesn't want to say he loves her because he's paranoid that people don't mean it because they say it so much. He thinks it diminishes the meaning. They were watching the news and there's a plane crash and he's talking about how, you know, these things always happen in threes. So he doesn't want to get on the plane now to go on a business trip. And so it establishes pretty early that Sam's got some supernatural or super worldly kind of beliefs.
Mm-hmm. And Molly is a sculptor. She makes pottery, which leads to one of the most iconic scenes in film history.
That still grosses me out to this day. You are not alone. I am here with you. We're all a little crazy. Not in a creepy way. You are not alone.
We've already talked about some of my peccadilloes on our mental health mental health segments before. But one of the things I have is I cannot stand feeling anything sticky on my hands. But also, I not only can I not stand that, I cannot stand feeling anything slimy or gritty or anything between my fingers. I cannot stand it. I will lose my shit. I will go full on Silkwood shower on my hands if I feel anything between my fingers. I cannot stand it.
You and I are so related.
Yeah. So watching that scene, it's supposed to be very romantic and very sexy. It gives me the heebie-jeebies the whole time. I just can't.
I see, and my problem with it was that first of all, it's brown. It's this brown pottery clay, which to me is like, ugh. It's a bad visual. I know it's supposed to be like this kitschy, romantic, sexy, swirly kind of look. They're touching each other's hands, but they're like doing finger sex with clay, which is disgusting. Like, go hose yourself off. Blech. But then magically, after they start all this, the next frame, they're completely clean. There is no clay anywhere, which is, we know that's a big fat lie. She's got clay under her fingernails for years.
Doesn't matter. I approve it.
But similar to you,
good choice.
Similar to you, like if I get anything sticky on my fingers, it drives me absolutely out of my mind. And syrup on any kind of breakfast condiment, any kind of breakfast item, if it goes anywhere, It usually ends up between my fingers, and that is the quickest way for me just to be like, okay, I'm done with this, and I need to go scour myself with alcohol. So,
yeah, it's I enjoy a syrupy breakfast item, but it requires careful fork management, because if you don't manage the curve of the fork, the syrup will drip down to the part where you touch it. And that will ruin your entire, it'll ruin my entire week. I don't want to put that on anybody else.
So I was going to say to further compound it, because I have a long beard now, like a drop of syrup in my beard, I will have to go wash my entire beard because I just I have to get it out. So, and this has been your mental health corner for the day.
Probably not the only one. But, you know, Patrick Swayze, very good looking, very in shape guy. Demi Moore, very good looking.
I think she was being pushed as a sex symbol at that point, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can have this conversation now. Yeah, Hollywood was really trying to make her a sex symbol.
Was this pre-striptease?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. Because this is the movie that made her like one of the top actresses in Hollywood, right?
Oh, yeah, because striptease wasn't until 96.
Yeah. I'm not convinced that she's actually good.
Good or sexy?
Sexy. She doesn't do it for me and never really has. But also good. Is she a good actor?
Well, what did you think of her in A Few Good Men?
Fine. She didn't really have much to do.
She was one of the leads.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Jack Nicholson, Tom Cruise, Kevin Pollak, Kevin Bacon, even Kiefer Sutherland, the dude that played Markinson, I think all of them made a much stronger impression on me than Demi Moore did in that movie.
She was in Mr. Brooks.
Yeah, I think we talked about how she wasn't good in Mr. Brooks.
G.I. Jane.
She gets a lot of credit in G.I. Jane for kind of transforming her body and being, you know, brave and unafraid to kind of be a little masculine with her performance. But is she actually good? I don't know. Is that even a good movie? I don't know.
G.I. Jane? It's a decent movie. I never saw Indecent Proposal.
That's another movie where they're trying to convince us that she's a sex symbol. It was fine.
Oh, she was in Saving Animal's Fire. Blame It on Rio. Holy crap.
Was she in The Master?
Yes.
Yeah. Love that show.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a show about an American dude training to become a ninja.
Okay. All right. So it turns out that Sam notices, because he seems to be pretty cognizant of what's operating within his department, that there's extra money in his accounts that he just can't seem to track where the proceeds have come from. And he's really trying to figure it out. And Carl seems a little interested in trying to help him. But Sam poo-poos that and kind of suggests, no, it's fine. And it establishes that they all have individual access codes or MAC codes that authenticate to their account so that they're the only ones authorized to make changes. And so we progress to Sam and Molly go to a Shakespeare event.
That they invite Carl to join them.
And Carl says it's not his thing, but he appreciates it. And After the show, Sam and Molly are walking home, and a mugger pops out and pulls a gun on Sam and Molly. Molly starts to freak out. Sam's like, no, just stay calm, and, you know, I got this, just don't hurt her. And the guy hits, I think he pistol whips Molly, and the struggle ensues, and Sam and this guy start struggling, and the gun goes off, and then you see Sam take off after the shooter, and as he turns around, he sees Molly crying, and he realizes she's crying over his body, which he is no longer attached to. And this is where he starts to kind of have this strange disconnect, if you will.
Yeah, I really like the ghost effects. You really get it from the perspective of the ghost. So Sam doesn't realize he's a ghost for a while. And neither do you as the audience. And you get the light kind of beckoning him. That was a nice touch, I thought.
The little sparklies.
Mm-hmm.
And he dismisses them.
Yeah, he wants to go, but also he wants to stay near Molly.
Right. And so, there's an ambulance that finally shows up. And then he gets dragged suddenly into the hospital, where they're trying to resuscitate him, and then apparently it doesn't work. So this is the point this time around when I watched it, when I started to have some problems with the ghost effect, because I have some questions, but but I'll hold those until the end. In the ER,
you mean like the rules of being a ghost?
Yeah. Well, the rules of being a ghost, but also the physics of how they interact with objects, solid, semi-solid, or pass through.
Yeah, it's 100% dependent on what is needed to advance the plot.
Right, because he's able to walk through things like doors and solid objects, but he's also able to make his presence physical enough that he can move objects. He can also inhabit people. But seemingly, if he's in a vehicle traveling, he's with the vehicle and the vehicle doesn't pass without him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of strange physics at work. And I know, and suspend your disbelief, and it's a movie and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, a very helpful old man starts to kind of explain to Sam what was going on. And there's some comedic effect where I think he has a one-liner like, ooh, gunshot, I'll do it every time. And he turns out the old man's waiting for his wife to pass away. And Sam's really confused and trying to figure things out. And then he starts like stalking Molly, or haunting her, I guess one might say.
Yeah, but he has no way of communicating with her or letting her know that he's even around.
Nope, he's just sitting in the apartment watching her mope and mourn and grieve.
Carl is sure around a lot, helping Molly go through all of Sam's stuff.
Carl makes himself indispensable, and he comes over and says, hey, Molly, let's go for a walk. And Sam just can't. He's not going to follow. He's just like, he can't quite psych himself up to get through the door.
Yes.
But as it turns out, waiting in the apartment, a man walks in and dun, 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 it's the same guy that shot and killed him. And he starts rifling through the apartment looking for something. And Sam's following him around, and Sam's pretty distressed at this point. And then
Molly comes home.
Yep.
She wasn't supposed to come home so soon.
Carl didn't do a good job. So Sam starts to panic because, of course, he's afraid some harm is going to come to Molly. But then Molly starts taking her clothes off, and, you know, gratuitous nudity might be coming. Spoiler, it doesn't. And Willie's googling and oogling. I guess not googling. He's oogling her at this point. And Sam doesn't know what to do, but luckily he freaks the cat out, and the cat takes a running leap at the killer's face and gives him a pretty good cut. So he takes off, he books it out of the apartment, and Sam decides he's going to follow. And then he finds out that his name is Willie, and he finds out all about where Willie lives, and he learns that Willie was sent by somebody, but he doesn't know who. Then he decides he's going to take off from Willie's apartment, and in his wanderings, he manages to come across a psychic shop. And I think his curiosity gets the better of him, and he decides to go into the psychic shop.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, he's desperate.
Yeah.
He knows there's something weird going on with this guy who killed him, but he doesn't have the ability to do much of anything. He also had a really strange encounter on the train when he was following Willie.
He did. Crazy guy.
Yeah, another ghost who could tell that he was a ghost.
Yeah, and seemed to be pretty violent and unstable.
And could also affect the world around him.
Yes.
He broke a glass window on one of the subway doors.
Well, and he was shoving people's objects around on the train, mm-hmm. in the subway car. So Sam decides to go into the psychic shop and see what's going on. And here's where we're introduced to Oda Mae Brown and her sisters through a psychic channeling of a customer's relative, to which Sam is incredulous and mocks the entire process. And slowly it is revealed through some good facial expressions and some good dialogue that, in fact, Oda Mae Brown can hear Sam, which he figures out. And he starts to harass her into helping him. And she's pretty resistant about it. She starts freaking out, and her sisters think she's possessed, but she's like, no. So she says, I'm not going to help you. Go away.
Because she can't see him. She can only hear him.
She can only hear him.
So he's just this disembodied voice that no one else can hear.
So she believes that she is going crazy. So Sam eventually breaks her will.
How do you feel about Whoopi Goldberg?
I have mixed feelings about her. I think this is a good performance from her.
Yeah.
She has good comedic timing. And she had good lines. And she has good expressions. So I think this is a fine performance. How would you rate her performance versus Demi Moore's performance? Let's use that metric.
Oh, she was way better than Demi Moore. She also had way more to do. She had a much more interesting role.
Yeah.
Much better written lines. But, I don't know, something about Whoopi Goldberg, I don't like. I've never liked. She had, like, a stand-up special on HBO, which is, like, I guess it was, like, part stand-up, part, like, one-woman play.
Yeah.
Where she would do a bunch of different characters.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, when I first saw that, I thought that was really amazing. It was very funny. It was also very sad in some parts.
Yeah, because where she climbs into the bucket of bleach.
Yeah, and then she's playing like a very young girl, like a kind of a latchkey kid. But yeah, very sad. But ever since then, I find her to be lacking some sort of charisma. Like, she can be funny in a sense that I might think, yeah, that's funny. But I don't enjoy her presence. I don't know what it is. I mean, even in Star Trek The Next Generation, I was amused when she showed up, but I did not like her on that show. I didn't think she was necessary.
Well, without her, you wouldn't have a big introduction and attention of the Borg.
Yeah, you still would have. you know, like, she had a string of movies that all of them weren't great, like Jumpin' Jack Flash. And
oh, but Jumpin' Jack Flash is one of my favorites.
I thought it was one of my favorites because it was on all the time, so I saw it a bunch. But it's not a good movie.
No, I haven't rewatched it in some time.
This is not a good movie.
It was it was fine at the time.
Yeah. Whoopi Goldberg is somebody I feel like I should like. I just don't.
Let's see. Whoopi Goldberg, The Color Purple.
I've never seen that.
The Color Purple is really good. I would recommend it. It's not a light movie, to no one's surprise.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those movies I feel like I should have seen. But I just never have.
Burglar, Fatal Beauty.
I'm shaking my head at all of these.
Beverly Hills Brats, Ghost, A Different World. Oh, that was TV. Soap Dish. Oh, Soap Dish is awesome. Sister Act. Sister Act is eh. Oh, Made in America. I think Made in America is Ted Danson. Is that what that is?
That sounds right. Isn't that where they started hooking up?
Probably, yes. Ted Danson. 93. I saw that in a theater with a friend.
And wait, is that a finger quotes friend?
It was the friend of somebody who this is so much drama. He is a friend, but was only friends with me because he was attempting to steal my boyfriend.
I knew it.
So there was drama, to which I had none of it. I was like, whatever. The Lion King, Karina. Karina was okay. That was okay movie. Boys on the Side, that was okay, but rough.
Is that Drew Barrymore?
Uh-huh. In and Out.
No.
An Alan Smithy film. Oh, How Stella Got Her Groove Back. That's another one I saw in the movie theater.
I've never seen that one.
It's okay. It's a chick flick. Or a gay dude flick, apparently, because I went to see it. Sorry, I'm just going through IMDb. Rat Race. Yes, Rat Race.
No.
I'm sorry you don't share our love of Rat Race.
Our mother up in heaven.
See, now you're just trying to make me laugh. It works. I think our father also has a dislike for Whoopi Goldberg for a different reason. I think her lack of eyebrows freaks him out.
Wow.
But I don't know that for sure. I could be completely making that up, which is a hallmark of our podcast.
It is?
I'm making that up too, see?
I believe every word you say.
I'm just making it all up. So, let's see. Sam convinces Otome to help him by singing verse after verse after verse of the same verse of Henry VIII. Which is by, what, Herman's Hermits? Is that?
Sounds right.
Anyway, so he convinces that Otome needs to go see Molly and warn her that she's in danger. And so they go to Molly's apartment. And Otome tries to give the information, but, Molly's pretty skeptical.
Which is reasonable.
Yeah. And then there's some back and forth. And she basically, Sam gives Otome enough information that, in theory, only Molly and Sam would know. And that kind of convinces Molly. And so, which convinces Molly to go to the police and say, oh, Sam was killed and it wasn't just a mugging. And here's the thing. And the police are like, The female cop was the most dismissive.
Yeah, she was really mean.
Yeah. And the male, who we have seen in a ton of things.
Steven Root.
Yeah. He's always great, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Shockingly young in this.
Yes.
Like baby-faced. Not unlike the baby-faced younger brother of mine who was in a picture that our father recently emailed me.
Oh, no. Great. He's still going through photos.
It was a picture of both of my sisters-in-law surrounding me with their tongues out at Rice Bowl.
Huh.
And
no memory of that.
You are off in the corner of the picture. And so I'm pretty sure it was about 2000. I want to say it was 2006. So Molly goes to the police and basically the police are super duper skeptical and basically tell her, yeah, this probably isn't what you think it is. So Molly relays the name Willie Lopez that Sam discovered and channeled through Oda Mae. And the police can't find any record for Willie Lopez, which I call bullshit on, because first of all, there's got to be 1,000,000,000 Willie Lopez's, and there has to be at least one in the vicinity.
This is New York, right?
Yeah. There has to be at least one that has a record. Come on.
Yeah. But they've got a lot of information on Oda Mae Brown.
Yeah. Turns out she's not exactly a fine, upstanding citizen. She's got quite a past.
She's done time.
Yeah. She's a known forger and con artist. And they basically talk Molly out of everything that she got tucked into. By trying to dismiss everything that she says, you know, she knows things that she couldn't have known, except, you know, only Sam and I would know. And she's, well, the cop dismisses her, saying, you'd be surprised what actually is available. So, you know, I understand, but, you know, grief is powerful and, you know, go home and have a drink and get over it.
He also tells her that she can press charges. I'm not sure what for.
Well, I think the implication was she could press charges because perhaps Oda Mae was somehow got information improperly. That's the only thing I could think of. But rooting through somebody's trash is actually not illegal, I think the Supreme Court upheld, so I could be wrong about that. Molly ends up pretty distraught. Carl comes over, starts being all schmoozy and handsy, and Molly's upset, and Carl says, hey, let me look into this for you. Let me try and find out what's going on. Why don't you give me the address, and I'll go check out this Willie dude and see what's going on. And so Sam decides to follow Carl, and it turns out,
because he's worried about him.
Yeah, because he wants to make sure everything's okay, and he's pretty devastated to find out that Willie's working for Carl.
To no one's surprise.
And some drug dealers, apparently. And so his whole plan was to get Willie to rob Sam to get the key to which Carl could use to get Sam's little book, which has Sam's password, so he can transfer them. So this is this big house of cards. But because Carl needs to transfer all this money into an account that is set up by some drug dude, and I forget his name. They say it a couple times in the movie, but it doesn't matter. But they're trying to set up the account under the fictitious name of Rita Miller.
Yeah, so he's laundering $4 million. And for that, he gets a 2% cut.
80 grand.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of risk and trouble to go through for 80 grand. So, Sam decides, he figures out that he should probably figure out how to start manipulating objects in real time. So he goes to the subways and starts hunting after the crazy violent guy. And eventually tracks him down. But there's some pretty fun kind of searching footage where he's like sticking his head through walls and he's looking around and looking through train cars, and eventually he finds the guy and stands up to him, and eventually he stands up to him enough that the guy kind of gives him some respect and says, all right, you know, we'll talk, let's go figure it out. And so he kind of starts trying to give Sam some primers on how to start interacting with the real world. And then, as it turns out, we find out that Subway Dude is pretty mentally unstable. So apparently you don't get all of that kind of instability resolved when you die. You just carry your mania and craziness into the next dimensions.
Yeah. And also the way you can interact with the physical world is to just emote really hard.
Push it way down from your diaphragm. So there's a montage of Sam kind of trying to manipulate objects, and there's some slapsticky kind of fun failure and eventually success footage. The man starts to get a little cranky and breaks open a cigarette machine, to which he's like, oh man, if I could just have a cigarette. And then you know, Sam starts pressing him about, you know, what happened to him, and he kind of disassociates and freaks the fuck out. And so Sam's like, ooh, it's time for me to go. So then Sam goes back to Oda May and says, here's what we're going to do. Since Carl's laundering the money, we're going to go rob the money back. So basically he devises a plot to which sends Oda May back to the bank.
You call it a plot. I call it a caper.
Through some pretty creative process and misdirection and some pretty good social engineering, I would say. Sam coaches Oda May to be Rita Miller, to which...
Yeah, because Sam knows all the players of the bank, so he can give Oda May enough information to think that they should know her too.
And she's good enough to be convincing, at least from the character's perspective. And she really kind of plays it up, sometimes too much, sometimes very much over the top. Sometimes her improv gives her a little bit of misdirection. But eventually she ends up with a cashier check for the $4 million. And she has a run-in with Molly. But she escapes and then back out on the street where she is already spending the money that she doesn't even have. Sam says, oh, no, you can't keep it. You got to give it away. Sorry.
Yeah.
You were never going to have this money. So there's the funny little slapsticky with the nuns. And Oda May signs the check over to the nuns in the new shelter that they're building. But as it turns out, this makes Carl super desperate because he now can't find the money. And he starts freaking out. Like cold sweats, heart attack kind of freaking out.
Yes, and this is where we find out he really does not understand computers. He just keeps banging the keys over and over again.
He keeps expecting to have a different result.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just turning off the computer, he throws the monitor on the floor. A giant monitor.
It didn't break.
I'm sure it didn't.
It was a green screen, too.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the days, man. We had an amber monitor, if you recall.
I do. It was our last monitor before we got the three-color version.
Yes, the RGB. Mm-hmm. Notorious RGB. Anyway.
So Carl's freaking out.
Big time. Heads back to Molly's.
Was this before or after his coffee trick? His, oops, I spilled coffee on my shirt. I better take it off.
I think that this was after. I think that happened while he was making moves, and then she spurns him, and then he goes to check out Willie.
Yeah, he was making headway until...
figuratively until, speaking.
Well, and literally. until Sam actually moved like a picture.
He knocked a picture over.
Inadvertently.
Which then brings Molly back to like, oh no. Oh no, I can't do this. So Carl comes back and he's freaked out and he's freaking Molly out. And Molly's like, does this have anything to do with her being at the bank today? And Carl was like, what?
Yeah. So Carl grabs Willie and then they go after Oda Mae.
In a pretty brazen fashion, one would say. Just shooting bullets wildly, to which Sam has followed and tells Oda Mae that they have to get out of the apartment. But so they end up in another apartment while Carl and Willie go through the apartment, Oda Mae's in her sister's apartment. And Sam has some pretty good revenge kind of motions in the apartment where he's messing with Willie pretty bad, including that fun little mirror scene where he scrawls out boo in the steam.
Yes, very silly. Very, very silly.
Yeah, but a little bit funny, and, you know, the rest of it's horror movie-esque, though. Could be. Mm-hmm. And then, eventually, Willie is so freaked out. There's actually one scene where he actually skids down a flight of stairs, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was a nice stunt.
Yeah, I've done that by accident, so I can't imagine trying to do it on purpose. But he had a better result than I did, because I didn't land it when I did it, so.
Well, if you were being chased by a non-corporeal Patrick Swayze, you might have had a different outcome.
Oh, I wouldn't run from him. But anyway, Willie is so freaked out, and Sam keeps messing with him, and then as he's running and running and running, he gets smashed in between some cars. And you see Willie, and then it turns out Willie sees Willie, because Willie's no longer...
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Does this make Sam a murderer?
Well, kind of.
If you chase somebody into the street and they get hit by a car and die.
Yeah, but then there's the whole free will thing. Free Willie. I had to do it. It had to be done. Eric will be so proud. I think because Willie has free will and he could have avoided the cars, but he was just so freaked out that it was his choice to run out in traffic when he didn't have to necessarily. So, I think it's probably a gray area, but you make a fair point. But as it turns out, the creepy, nasty, evil shadows come and drag Willie off, which is pretty horrific.
Yeah, this is where we get to see the other side of the light with the sparklies.
And this scared the hell out of me when I saw it in the movie theater, and it still gives me the creeps. Even to this day, it's pretty horror movie-esque.
Yeah, it's good conceptually. The effects really don't hold up.
Well, but at the time, and the sound effects, the creepy creatures and screaming and ugh.
I think it's crying babies.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's what that sound effect is.
Like slow down or something?
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible, terrible. So Willie's dead and gets dragged off to presumably the bowels of hell, but I don't know. Sam and Oda Mae return to the apartment where Molly...
Carl just takes off.
Yeah, he books it. He's like, nothing to see here. I got, YOLO. Sam heads back to Molly's apartment with Oda Mae and convinces Molly that it really is him by levitating a penny up the door and then into Molly's hand. So now she believes.
Yep, so she lets Oda Mae in and they call the cops.
And then they have that that lesbian scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I gotta say, I was not a big fan of this scene.
It's really cheesy.
Yeah. I think it was meant to throw a bone to the boyfriends that got stuck going to this movie, that they thought there was going to be some hot lesbian action, but Demi Moore and Whoopi Goldberg together, not so much hot lesbian action. And then when you transfer in Patrick Swayze's body, That's just total bait and switch. It's like tackle and switch, really. Even I was not swayed by that. Swayed by this ways.
There was nothing. There was no sexual chemistry between any of them, though.
Yeah, and you never really even saw. Well, I was saying you didn't see, but you see that whole, you know, the pottery thing, which by the way is parodied in, I think, one of the Naked Gun movies. So,
mm-hmm. No, I'm sure it's parodied in a ton of stuff.
Yeah. So Carl returns, and the ladies decide to flee up the fire escape, and Carl follows chase, and they end up in some lofty construction area above their apartment, which already looked cavernous and giant anyway. So
they live in the most expensive apartment in downtown New York.
They must. But I give them credit. They're smart enough to climb up and pull the ladder up. So they weren't quite the helpless dames in danger, kind of damsels in distress that we normally see. So I kind of did enjoy that part of it. But Carl has a gun and he's deciding, apparently he's an Olympic athlete because he can just crawl up things like Spider-Man.
Also, Sam can't really help out because he is weakened, because apparently that's what happens when you possess a human. You get super weak as a ghost.
Yeah, we had his little ghost gasm.
Yeah, so he had to wait through his refractory period.
Finally, he comes back and he starts messing with Carl, and there is mayhem that ensues. And then eventually a hook gets swung into a glass window, to which Carl is underneath as it falls down and in almost cartoony style stabs Carl to death through the torso.
That was a very charitable description of what actually happened. Sam murders Carl too.
Yeah. Which is also like a horror movie thing.
Uh-huh.
It was horrific. I mean, it really was jarring. It was jarring when I saw it in the theater, and it's still jarring as an adult now.
Yeah, he chases and pushes Carl and through a window that eventually kills him.
Yeah, but in his defense, though, Carl was after and possibly going to kill one or both of them. So it could be said that the Swayze was defending them from Carl. So, but as it turns out, the shadowy creatures have no interest in Sam. They only have an interest in dragging off Carl.
Mm-hmm.
But not before Sam can give that, oh, Carl, kind of patronizing, you know, they're coming for you. They're coming for you, Barbara.
There was that nice moment when Carl doesn't yet realize that he's dead, but he sees Sam. And he actually goes, Sam? And Sam looks at him and goes, your luggage.
Very nice.
I might be getting that confused with another movie.
I think perhaps. And then we get this intentionally, emotionally manipulative ending where suddenly Sam appears to Molly and Oda May both, where the little sparklies come back, illuminate him, and he says, "Up, oh, time to go." And they have this awkward, cartoony, fake ethereal kiss that doesn't happen. Sam gives his thanks, and then he's like, "Screw you, bitches! I'm out of here." And then he slowly walks off into the crazy background of a million creepy little angel creatures.
Yeah, that did not look comforting at all.
It looked pretty frightening. Really scary. To me. Yeah. Dun dun dun. End of the movie. So.
Oh, you skipped over the epilogue where they cut to 9 months later and Demi Moore has a huge pregnant belly with a ghost baby.
Can you imagine? I think that what John Travolta then becomes the talking baby, right?
It was setting up the sequel of Son of Ghost.
Man, can you imagine? So that was 128 minutes of movie. It was pretty long considering.
Yeah, but you know, it was well paced. I mean, it moved along.
It did.
There weren't slow parts.
No, there really weren't slow parts. So I will say that it's hard for me to grade this movie because I want to give it an A just because I have such fondness for it. I don't think it's an A movie, though, but it's a strong B. I'd say it's probably a B plus for me. So it is still a good movie. Obviously, some of it's dated and some of the plot has some problems. And we've already discussed that the ghost physics are a little bit lacking to what I would like, not consistent, but again,
they're extremely convenient.
Yeah, they're very elastic. But with all of that said, I think it's still a good movie. It was certainly entertaining. It didn't feel like a chore. Even boyfriend Jesse liked it, which I was a little surprised that he liked it as much as he did, because I hadn't expected him to, but he did. He liked this movie a lot. He had never seen it before. So that's two thumbs up on our side. But if you haven't seen it, those of you who haven't seen it, if you haven't seen it, or if you haven't seen it in a long time, go watch it. It's still a great movie. So, Brother Drew, was it worth it?
Yeah. I mean, I know it probably sounded like we were ragging on this movie quite a bit, but this is a really, really competent movie. And original, and everybody for the most part did a really good job. I mean, Whoopi Goldberg was really good, even though I don't really like her. Patrick Swayze was really good in a role that was kind of against type for him. Tony Goldwyn was really good as the smarmy villain. He kind of stole the movie. And Demi Moore was fine, I think. I didn't dislike her.
So, do you think Brother E should watch this movie? Because he says he's never seen it.
Yeah. I think this is one of those movies that you got to watch.
I think so, too.
Just to round out your
cultural relevance.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree. And this,
it has iconic scenes in it.
It has scenes that have spawned all kinds of parody.
Mm-hmm. And Whoopi Goldberg won an Oscar for this movie.
Oh, God. Did she really?
She won an... This movie won two Oscars.
What?
Whoopi Goldberg and Best Original Screenplay.
Okay, well... all right. The screenplay... but Whoopi Goldberg got...
Really? I think it's pretty well written.
I mean, I guess, does that make up for her Oscar for not getting The Color Purple?
Probably.
Or did she?
I mean, the Oscars that year were wild. It's the same year that Jeremy Irons won for Reversal of Fortune.
Oh, I love that movie.
Kevin Costner won a directing Oscar that year.
Dances with Wolves? Or was that another year?
Yeah, he beat out Scorsese for Goodfellas. Dances with Wolves was Best Picture over Goodfellas. It's crazy. Ghost was also nominated for Best Picture. Richard Harris, Jared Harris's father, was nominated for Best Actor that year.
Spring was never waiting for us, girl. It ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. Between the parted pages, and we're pressed in love's hot fevered iron like a striped pair of pants. MacArthur's Park is melting in the dark. all the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again. Oh no.
The Grifters were up for a bunch of awards.
Oh, the Grifters. Jessica. Yeah.
Angelica Houston.
I always do that. I know it's Angelica Houston. And Gross Point Blank dude.
John Cusack.
Yeah.
Benning. Benning and Angelica Houston were both nominated.
Yeah. The Grifters was at the theater when I worked there. So
I really like The Grifters. That movie was disturbing.
It was. Did you see it in the theater?
No, I think I saw it on the movie channels.
Oh yeah, it was batshit.
Diane Ladd was also nominated for Wild at Heart that year.
Oh yeah! Wow,
it was a stacked year.
What a year for movies!
Yeah, Whoopi Goldberg won an Oscar for this movie, Ghost. Oh, that was also the year Dick Tracy came out. Al Pacino was nominated for playing a cartoon character in Dick Tracy.
That was a shiny turd of a movie, by the way.
That movie was terrible.
That movie had a midnight opening, and the Valley River Cinemas opened at midnight. And they wanted us to go work there, and I was like, screw that. I have no interest in going to work at midnight for you to drive a half an hour out of town.
Yeah.
For no extra money.
That was also the year that Robert De Niro was nominated for Awakenings.
Which is also a great movie.
It seemed good at the time.
Oh, it doesn't hold up?
I'm not sure it does. But that was definitely a movie I saw for free because of you.
I saw Awakenings in the theater. I liked it, but it's a sad movie. It is not an upbeat movie.
No. I mean, it's hopeful for a little bit in the middle.
So the crazy subway dude, Vince Schiavelli, he has one of those faces where I thought he's been in a ton of crap, but I don't think he's actually been in that much stuff. I'm looking through.
Really? He had to have been in something that we watched a lot of then, because he seems super familiar.
Right. He's been dead for a while, by the way. 2005, he died. MacGyver, Head of the Class, Cagney and Lacey, Remington Steele, Moonlighting, Fall Guy, Punky Brewster, Who's the Boss? Benson, Hardcastle, McCormick. Oh, he was in Night Court. He was in Better Off Dead. He was in...
Oh, I bet that's where I know him from.
He was in Johnny Dangerously. He was in Amadeus. He was in Fairy Tale Theater. We've absolutely seen that.
Oh,
Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Heart to Heart, which you may not remember Heart to Heart.
I remember Heart to Heart.
I loved Heart to Heart. WKRP in Cincinnati. Rescue from Gilligan's Island, the TV movie. Starsky and Hutch. Dorf on Golf. He was in Next Generation, Star Trek Next Generation.
You're kind of bearing the lead, though.
Knots Landing.
He has a James Beard Foundation Award.
Does he?
He does. He wrote cookbooks.
Really? I did not know that. I didn't see that. Who knew? He was in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Milos Forman loved him.
Death to Smoochie. So a shout out to Vincent Schiavelli, who passed away in 2005. So sad panda. Are we done with the movie?
I think we're done with the movie. It was pretty decent. I think it holds up pretty well.
Yeah, I did too. So, Brother E, you need to watch it. Even Boyfriend Jesse says you need to watch it. Boyfriend Jesse says that this is totally a Brother E movie. He would dig this movie. So I give him credit for that. So, housekeeping. Do you have any housekeeping for this evening?
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know if it's pod worthy or not, but we can talk about it. I guess maybe it's more of a, I'm gonna pull in Eric. It's really maybe more of a question.
Okay. Well, let me interrupt and start with my housekeeping then, because it's mine is fine for the pod. So I've had a bit of a week. I had the privilege of attending a safety committee meeting at the building I work in today. That was all kinds of fun. But my day has been a bit frenetic because there was extra people in my office today that I don't normally have. Sure. So I worked in my east side office today, which is usually just me and one other person. And we're the only two in the office that we're in. We're kind of satellited off on our own. We're on the first floor of the building, and we're not really surrounded by anybody, and we're behind a closed door. And so we're, you know, it's pretty private, and we have a nice working relationship. She's kind of my work wife, and it's just the two of us. It's pretty quiet, and we make the same jokes to one another, and we make fun of people as they walk by sometimes, but not inappropriately, and certainly not anybody who would be seeking our services. We had an abundance of people today because there was a staff meeting, a local staff meeting for the building that I and the supervisor decided to attend and go over some things with the employees and remind them of some things that are going on. But anyway, apparently I got so frazzled in discussing things that happened at the end of today because I had so much going on that all got crammed into like the last hour of my day. When I got home, I put my work bag down, which has got like my lunch from the day. If I've got my water bottle and my plate and a notebook and some stuff, and then my laptop bag because my work laptop goes with me, and I put that down. And I realized as I put that down, there was no laptop in my laptop bag.
Oh no!
So I was like, well. Shit. And I have tomorrow off. So, usually on my days off where they're still open, which is tomorrow, I still work from home in the mornings. I still get up and take sick calls because it's just too problematic to say, hey, this Friday I'm not working, so call somebody else for sick calls who doesn't normally do it. And it's for the 10 minutes that it takes me, it would add like an hour or two to somebody else's work day. And it's just easier if I take care of it. So I don't mind doing that. For when I'm gone longer term, like when I was in Alaska recently, then I hand it off. I don't take the sick calls. But for those every other Friday I'm off, it's fine. But Boyfriend Jesse said, well, do you need to go back and get it? And I said, yeah, I need to go back and get it because I can't do my work from home without my work laptop because I don't have access to the same kind of things.
Okay, so you thought you just left it in a place where it should be, not...
I was hoping that I just left it in the dock on my desk because as I was finishing today, I was talking to the two other people in my office. And so it wasn't my normal routine of how I pack everything up and go. I was distracted by the conversation. So I clearly wasn't paying attention. So Boyfriend Jesse and I, after I got home and we waited a little while for traffic to die down, we discussed what we were going to do for dinner. And then he said, okay, well, we'll run out. And he wanted to go with because he didn't want to, he had the day off, so he was kind of bored. So he and I went out to my office, drove all the way back out there. And as we go into the building, they're shampooing all the carpets. So we have to walk around. That was kind of annoying. And so we get to my office and go into my office, and there's no laptop on my desk.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm having that long, dark moment of the soul where I'm like, oh, crap. Maybe one of my coworkers noticed that I left my laptop out and they were nice enough to put it in my... Nope. I thought, well, maybe I put it up... Nope. Nowhere in my office is my laptop. So now I'm trying not to panic, But boyfriend Jesse says, well, what, you know, what's the big deal? And I'm like, well, the big deal is I'm responsible for it, first of all. Second of all, while it doesn't have any patient information on it, it still requires a disclosure that a device that is attached to the county network disappeared. And then I have to have it wiped. And then I have to buy a new one, which, you know, the program will pay for, but I'm going to get in trouble for it. So I'm trying to retrace every place that I had it. And so I go back out to the car, and he was like, well, maybe it fell out of your bag into the car. I'm like, well, physically, I don't know how that could have happened because the bag was zipped up, but, you know, maybe gremlins. And look in the car and there's nothing. And so we decided we were going to get Panda Express on the way home just to draw my sorrows for what was inevitably going to come. Until somebody either turned my laptop in or until I discovered I dropped it in the road or left it on the roof of my car or God knows what happened. And then boyfriend Jesse said, are you sure it's not in your other work bag? And I said, well, I guess it could be, but it would be super unlike me to have done that because it doesn't fit easily into my work bag as much as the laptop bag. And I have all kinds of stuff crammed into my work bag, so it makes it difficult to put stuff in there that doesn't go in there normally. So anyway, we get Panda Express and come home, and lo and behold, my laptop is indeed in my work bag, not my laptop bag. So yay, I have my laptop. But then I'm like, God damn it, if I would have just checked that before we left, I would have saved us all like an hour and a half of agony and traffic. So I just I was so frustrated because it all happened because I wasn't paying attention and my routine got disrupted and my attention span is so crappy that the ADD is that like I couldn't track everything at once. Oops.
Well, it sounds like a stressful evening, but at least the outcome was decent.
Yeah, no, it could have been lots worse. Because having to call IT security after hours and say, need you to remote wipe my laptop and disable it and maybe, you know, I don't know, order a new one would have been a unwelcome surprise to my boss tomorrow morning. So luckily it turned out, but other than that, things are pretty calm around the homestead here. Temperatures are still in the 80s and 90s. Not horrible, but not great. Not terrible, but not great. 3.8, you know.
3.6.
3.6, sorry, you're right. What else? What else is going on? That's about it. Oh, I don't know if you listened to the Valley of the Dolls episode yet.
I don't think it's out.
Yeah. Eric's a filthy liar. Have you ever seen Valley of the Dolls?
No.
Yeah.
I had no interest in seeing it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, no. Don't. Save yourself the... Don't watch it. Don't bother. You're lucky you dodged the bullet.
Yeah, that was... I specifically made that a you and Eric movie when I put the calendar together.
Yeah.
No interest.
It was awful. It really was awful. Yeah, it was awful. So
yeah, I was really cracking up a couple weeks ago when we were kind of doing a brief look ahead at the calendar and Eric, like, very earnestly, it was like, it's me and Jason next week, not you, Drew. Well, are there any movies coming up that you aren't interested in? And I was like, yeah, Valley of the Dolls. It's already scheduled.
Yeah. So Eric claims he doesn't like musicals. And while Valley of the Dolls isn't really a musical, lots of singing. Lots of bad, like, 60s singing.
But he liked it.
Yeah, I don't know. It was an experience. So, as he's editing this, I still don't forgive him. So, so anyway, but that's all I have. I think next week it's just you and he, right?
No, it's all of us.
Is it? What's next week?
Citizen Kane. So Oh, Citizen Kane. Yeah, so I do have a bit of housekeeping that's okay for the podcast. So I've mentioned before that I'm trying to keep up with the movies I watched on Letterboxd. And I follow Eric, or Eric follows me on or maybe both on Letterboxd. Anyway, he's the only one I follow. So when I think I follow you too, but you're inactive.
Oh yeah, I need to go in and do that.
Yeah. Oh, it's fine. It's fine. But it shows me like recent activity of people either I follow or who follow me. Anyway, it's only Eric. That's the only one I see. So this week, it's been rough at work lately. So, and I've had a lot of stuff going on, not at work. So I really just wanted to unwind and watch something really mindless. And MacGruber was on Hulu. And I remember thinking, I saw MacGruber a long time ago because I loved MacGyver. I loved the MacGruber sketches on SNL. I may have even seen MacGruber in the theater. And I was unimpressed. I think I was pretty snobby about it. It has very, very base, lowbrow humor in it. And so at the time, I thought it was really dumb. Did not enjoy it. But for some reason, I was in the mood for that. Something really dumb.
Sure.
And mindless.
I refer to that as brain candy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I put it on while I was doing laundry. And there's so much about it that I'd forgotten. Like, Ryan Phillippe is in it, and he plays it pretty straight. Also, the bad guy in the movie is Val Kilmer. And I forgot how funny Val Kilmer can be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he did Hot Shots and Real Genius early in his career, but then he became a serious actor, a leading man, Jim Morrison, an action movie star. But he is so funny in MacGruber. And I don't know why. MacGruber just hit me in a completely different way. Like, I was able to not be like a movie snob about it and just really enjoy the absurdity in it. And so it is really funny.
It's your rat race is what you're saying.
It could be.
Yeah.
So I was really pleasantly surprised. And so I finished MacGruber and sort of that evening, I was like, okay, I actually watched the movie today. I better go put it in my letterbox. And I open it up. I'm like, great. I'm putting in MacGruber, but you know, whatever, you know, who cares?
Right.
And then I open up and I see recent activity. And it's like recently reviewed by, Eric Anderson, Citizen Kane. So he's got Citizen Kane up as his like most recent, and I'm like searching for MacGruber. I'm like, God damn it, Eric.
That's hilarious.
Well played. Yeah. Well played, brother E.
I mean, we'll discuss it. I don't believe that he, I don't believe he had seen Citizen Kane before, but I couldn't swear to it.
Oh yeah. I watched it with him when I was little.
Really?
Yeah.
Not an appropriate movie. Did you understand any of it?
Not really.
Yeah. As an adult, I've seen it half a dozen times. And the first couple times, I really didn't understand everything that was going on. By about the third time I watched it, I got it. I finally got it. It finally clicked. But we'll just...
I didn't appreciate Citizen Kane really until I saw the HBO movie about the making of it, which we are also going to discuss, the three of us.
I think also RKO 187, I think it's called.
RKO 281.
281, which is also a great movie.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly dramatized, but great movie.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Oh, I didn't know that was an HBO movie. But it might have been. I don't know, but no, that was a great movie. I loved that movie. But if nothing else, The best part of all of it is Orson Welles' Frozen Peas commercial. We'll see. I'm sure boyfriend Jesse has never seen Citizen Kane. So I have like the collector's edition. So it also doesn't hurt that I've actually been to the Hearst Mansion. So.
Oh, on the Pacific Coast Highway?
Uh-huh. Wow. I have probably like 500 pictures. I pulled a dad.
Very cool. I drove by it once. It looked amazing.
Yeah. We took a full tour and went up into it. And you actually get to go inside it.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was nuts. It's nuts. It's just crazy. Unbelievable. It's hard to believe that somebody lived there and that it wasn't just this giant movie set, because it just looks like a giant movie set. Building after building after building on this, just this huge expanse on the top of a hill, mountain, really. So, yeah, it's impressive. Other than that, so next week is Citizen Kane, and I don't think I have anything else.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson, so sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay, welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.